Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we also want to let you know we're sponsored today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More on them in a bit. Jim, let's start with the good martini. And it's not very often in Washington where just about everybody agrees somebody made a good decision. When the person making the decision is Donald Trump, it's extraordinarily rare that everybody thinks he made a good decision. We haven't really had this sort of reaction since the selection of General Mattis to be defense secretary. And even then, you had a couple of Democrats wringing their hands about the fact that he hadn't been out of the service long enough to supposedly qualify to be the civilian leader of the Defense Department. But yesterday, on apparently take three, President Trump announced that Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster will be the new National Security Advisor. This, of course, follows the whole Michael Flynn controversy. And then we found out late last week that former Rear Admiral Harward turned down the position of National Security Advisor. So Monday at Mar-a-Lago, Trump introduced McMaster, and pretty much everybody thinks this is a great idea, right, left, and middle. Here's David Ignatius, definitely left of center for The Washington Post, but somebody who actually does understand what's going on in terms of national security, speaking on MSNBC.
He is a warrior intellectual. He is someone who has made his name through his career speaking truth to power. This is a man who almost didn't get promoted to brigadier general. He was passed over twice because he was his own person. He spoke out. He wouldn't play the promotion games.
Ignatius also pointing out that McMaster was also the person who probably really came up with the idea behind the successful surge strategy in Iraq that General Petraeus employed. And then he also was one of the people who said, you got to get rid of the corruption in Afghanistan if you're going to make progress there, which I think a lot of people recognize. But Jim, a guy who speaks truth to power, we like that. And it sounds like everybody thinks this guy's got good credentials.
Yeah, I think Ala Pundit over at Hot Air put it very well when he said, look, every time you worry that Donald Trump's going to throw another Flynn at you, he turns around and gives you a Mattis or a Gorsuch. And somebody else had observed that, you know, look, every day Donald Trump goes out in front of the cameras or on Twitter and he says something that is not always coherent, not always accurate, not always what you'd want to see and fitting to the decorum of the president of the United States. But Trump, you know, when he says, I hire the best people, yes, there are plenty of examples in which he hasn't, but there are a lot of cases, you know, so far in this administration where he has picked very good people. And I think those of us who are trying to keep a reasonably, let's say, cautiously optimistic take on this administration look to things like this and feel like, okay, this is an example in which he does have a admiration for the right kind of people. And if he lets them free to make the best decisions they can, he could be in a good spot. I think also very reassuring is that McMaster has a reputation of being a guy who's not afraid to say no to power, to speak truth to power, to tell them things they don't want to hear. And that is, you know, it's something every president needs. I think it's really, you know, I think it's clear to say this is something that this administration undoubtedly needs. Greg, I remember a couple of podcasts ago, you and I talking about David Petraeus, another figure who was apparently in the running for this position. And while undoubtedly Petraeus had, you know, made some colossal errors in judgment and had earned a good portion of the public scorn and legal trouble that he found himself in, I remember saying, well, wait a second, you know, like this was the guy who was the architect of the Iraq strategy that worked from 2000, you know, began in late 2006, 2007 and into 2008. And I felt like that was not the sort of thing that should be just be easily brushed off or ignored. That, I mean, that to me is a really good measuring stick of successful leadership. Does it mean it's going to translate to everything? Probably not, but it's worth, you know, to me, it's a very big factor in the plus column that you know, should not be ignored for the sake of a scandal. McMaster gives me everything I like about Petraeus without any of the drawbacks. The observations about fighting in Tal Afar and all that stuff, basically he helped write the counterinsurgency field manual with Petraeus. He became a very influential and renowned aide. And so just a, you know, just the sterling kind of figure that you want to have in a position like this. And you want to talk about, you know, just a serious upgrade from Flynn. I know there are some folks who are still defenders of Flynn, but I would point out Greg, do you remember when Mattis was picked, the reaction from people who were out of the service, who had served with him? They were willing to run through walls for this guy. They'd never worked with anybody better. They were you know, enthusiastic. They just couldn't contain themselves. I don't know about you, Greg. I didn't see nearly as much of that from General Flynn. Now, not every boss is going to be beloved. Not everybody has to be beloved. If there was kind of this sense that Flynn, who had run the Defense Intelligence Agency and clearly had, you know, run big organizations, did not leave everybody feeling great about the job he had done there. So the widespread praise for McMaster says to me something good things about him. And so this looks like, all in all, now a really good team on national security. And, you know, probably just in time, considering the state of the world and the challenges we're likely to face over the next couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times when Trump says everybody thinks this is terrific, everybody thinks this is great, obviously it's a little bit of an exaggeration. In this case, it seems to be for the vast majority of the people in the know that they agree that this is an excellent choice. So let's move on to the bad martini. And in some ways, it's a follow up to yesterday's bad martini, as we focused on Milo. And towards the very end of that conversation, we realized that CPAC had officially disinvited Milo. Now we realize that Simon & Schuster has also taken away his book deal. There are some reports out there that his standing with Breitbart could be in jeopardy over these comments on this tape regarding pedophilia and so forth. Jim, but you in the Morning Jolt today, and David French to some extent in writing about this, has tried to take the issue of free speech away from being exclusively linked to Milo, which is where the debate has been over the past couple of weeks, and talk about where free speech truly is endangered now. And it's not necessarily what Milo's talking about, although it is a problem on college campuses. But as you point out in the Jolt today, where people try to get you fired and make you basically unemployable because they don't like what you think about a given issue.
I remember, you know, discussing this with David before he wrote the piece, and he said, as a lawyer who handles First Amendment cases and people who are unjustly punished for expressing their views, whether it's on college campuses or in workplaces, in his mind, the laws are actually pretty good. And you know, occasionally you get a judge who doesn't understand things or doesn't interpret the law as it's written or goes kind of haywire. But by and large, the legal system is pretty good about that, where you're much more likely to have. And the thing that I remember thinking about, my emphasis was Milo, when he talked about his free speech rights, is really something of an outlier. Thankfully, very few of us will, you know, for better or for worse, very few of us will ever be invited to speak at Berkeley. That especially thankfully, we are very unlikely to face a riot when we go and try to give our speech. Now, maybe if you're an outspoken conservative, then yeah, maybe you're going to see protests or something. But the experience of Milo is really not that representative for most Americans. What is, I think, a little more, I don't even want to say common, but let's say a little less rare, is the circumstance that former Red Sox great Curt Schilling found himself in, where one day ESPN decided, whoa, 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 we don't like what you're posting on your Facebook page about the transgender bathroom law in North Carolina. You can't call baseball games for us anymore. Now, you can agree with Curt Schilling, you can disagree with Curt Schilling, but I just have a very hard time believing that Curt Schilling got any better or worse as a baseball analyst because of what he said on Facebook. And now all of a sudden there is kind of this philosophy, both in corporate HR departments and I think this is heavily driven by these social media mobs of rage that decide to go after somebody. They decide to pick out someone and say, you have offended us. We have decided you are the enemy. And kind of this very Alinskyite, you know, freeze the target and attack the target. They generate an enormous amount of opposition to someone by going after their employer, as if the employer had anything to do with the fact of what they said on that. Look, if you really hate what Curt Schilling said about the transgender bathroom law, then take it out on Curt Schilling. Don't take it out on ESPN, and don't put it in a situation where ESPN gets so panicked that they say, oh, we're letting go Curt Schilling. We can't do that. Now, a lot of this reflects cowardice on the part of ESPN. Some would say more than cowardice. Some would say that ESPN is increasingly comfortable with adopting an image of a left-of-center company. And kind of enforcing an ideological mentality to sports journalism. But to me, you talk to people, and people do fear this idea they're going to post something on social media, their Facebook page, their Twitter page, and they're going to find themselves in trouble with their bosses over this, sometimes even fired. The most perfect, egregious example that I could find that I mentioned in the Jolt, Greg, was this school district that has a social media manager. By the way, I don't know if school districts should have social media managers. But let's assume they made the decision to have this. There's a, you know, it's the DC area. There was a forecast for snow. Everyone knows how the DC area loves those snow alerts.
Oh yes.
And someone tweeted at the school board or the school, you know, saying, "Please cancel school." And this woman, but he misspelled a word in it. And so this woman running the school's Twitter account responded back, tomorrow. He misspelled the word tomorrow. And she says, but if we cancel school, how will you learn how to spell the word tomorrow properly?
I remember that. Yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, like, is it being mean? I don't know. I think if you like, to me, I thought it was witty. I thought it was a good example of, hey, kid, this is why you got to go to school. I don't think it was meant to, you know, attack the student's self-esteem or anything like that. But, you know, within a couple of days, she was fired. Ugh. They said it was not appropriate. In that case, you really should not have a social media account, right? If that's enough to be, you know, too controversial or too outrageous. But I think most Americans feel like they're walking on eggshells because, God forbid, something you write gets misconstrued as being racist or homophobic or attacking someone because they're different or insensitive or something like that. And people suddenly go knocking, you know, they attack your employer, and your employer, all of a sudden, you get called down to the company's HR department. We are not our employers 24/7. And there's this eagerness to say, no, if you say something I don't like, I'm going to take this and I'm going to go to your employer and I'm going to hold your employer accountable for what you do so that you get fired. We now believe that the proper consequence for saying something controversial is being fired. Now, the problem is that every single one of us has some opinion that somebody else is going to find controversial. All of us say and do things that somebody out there is going to find offensive. And, you know, if you cannot have a if the First Amendment, people say, oh, the First Amendment doesn't apply to private employers. Yes, they're right. But here's the thing. If you have a severe draconian economic penalty for publicly expressing a controversial view, then you don't really have a First Amendment right to speak your mind. And I kind of feel like we are edging in that direction. I don't think this is necessarily something that requires a vast, giant action of Congress or something like that. What I just kind of want is to see employers to say, you know what? We hired so-and-so to be a barista at Starbucks, and she's really good at making the lattes. So we don't care what she has on her Facebook page. I know Vinny the car mechanic thinks the Trilateral Commission runs everything and that, you know, he you know, talks to his dog. But you know what? This man is the best when it comes to replacing a carburetor, right? I mean, the question is, are you good at your job? Well, then that should be enough. They should, you know, the goal of an employer should not be, I want the best employee who never says anything controversial. Because if you do that, you greatly limit the talent. And I point out in the case of, you know, every great person in every field has had some really bizarre habits or beliefs. The one that blew my mind, Greg, Steve Jobs. Creator of the iPhone, the genius behind Apple, the genius behind the Genius Bar, the most humbly named institution in any retail establishment ever, apparently did not wear deodorant, bathed once a week, ate certain diets because he thought that because he ate certain diets, he would only have to bathe once a week. I have no idea why he was so anti-bathing, but something about – maybe he must have had a fear of bathtubs or something. But for whatever reason, he did not clean himself. Oh, but he would do – put his feet into the company toilet to relax himself. Now, if that's, you know, if that doesn't get you fired, Greg, I think all of us deserve a little more slack for saying something controversial or stupid or offensive or something like that. But yeah, that's my rant for the day and my assessment of where the real threat to free speech is coming from. It's, you know, hyperactive, panic-minded HR departments and companies.
You know, Steve Jobs did get fired from Apple once, and we always thought it was about creative differences or control and that sort of thing.
Actually, if they had said that, his entire biography would have been different. It would have been Steve Jobs the genius. It would have been Steve Jobs the weirdo who refused to take a shower.
So, are you getting pressure to fire people from...
Speaking of employers...
from jobs because of their political beliefs? Do you need to fill a position because somebody was soaking their feet in the corporate toilet? Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place is not enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. You can quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. On to the crazy martini now. This is courtesy of Washington's number one news station, WTOP. Three of the national monuments in D.C. were vandalized over President's Day weekend, according to the National Park Service. Quote, somebody appears to have, with Sharpie or magic marker, tagged similar messages at the Lincoln Memorial, the Washington Monument, and the World War II Memorial, according to a spokesman with the National Park Service. The messages were likely written by just one person based on the similarity of what was written and the handwriting style. The spokesman did not reveal the content of the messages. NBC Washington reporting that the graffiti was not overtly political nor hateful and covered a fairly small space. So, Jim, two things here. If it's being described as not overtly political, is that the graffiti version of mostly peaceful when it comes to protests? Makes me wonder if it was a leftist message on there, since they're not explaining what was on there. But secondly, why can't people just enjoy a really nice weekend and enjoy the really nice things that they can see in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, I look at this and think, look, maybe it is Kilroy was here, or, you know, some other, you know, some explicitly non-political form of graffiti. Maybe it's just somebody's name. Maybe it's who was the guy who used to be, you used to see his graffiti tag everywhere? Cool Disco Dan. All up and down the Northeast Corridor, you'd see that anywhere. So, you know, or maybe it was Andre the Giant, the Obey, whatever, whoever it is. Maybe it's some non explicitly non-political graffiti. Color me a wee bit skeptical. It's no doubt, as those of us who are truly cynical have begun to suspect, the longer it takes for them to name a suspect in an atrocious act of violence, the more likely it is it sounds Islamic. Does that always hold? No, not always. But let's just say we're now wary and suspicious of this. Also, let us classify that if it was Trump rocks printed on these three, I just have a feeling that would get out quickly. I just have this feeling that would portray the Trump supporters in the most negative light, and everyone would think, oh my goodness, those knuckle dragging backwoods savages. Why can't they have respect for our national monuments? What's wrong with these people? So we'll see. Maybe it is genuinely apolitical graffiti. Whatever it is, they should be flogged. I have no problem with bringing back the old Singapore caning for people who do something like this. You should have enough good sense to not do this. Either that, or I don't know, maybe some sort of like tattoos. You know, you use a Sharpie on the National Monument, somebody should use tattoo ink on your face to say, I'm dumb enough to do something like defacing a National Monument. It's no more Mr. Nice Guy, Greg. I'm easygoing on freedom of speech until it ends up being written on a national monument.
Excellent way to tie it all together. Man, it's a complicated country we live in right now. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter. Right now, three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's at ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Join us on Wednesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.